Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I am Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are. It says the month starts to wind down. It's the 21st of January.
Can you believe it?
And we're doing another show.
You know, we're doing another show. There's a lot that is happening. It started off a very slow January, and all of a sudden the news is starting to come. I just read that Neel Kashkari is going to be running for governor of California. He's the guy that was the right-hand man for working with Hank Paulson. You know, the two bald guys. That's how I remember them.
Oh, the baldies.
Yeah, and he's running for governor now because his platform, which is very unique, by the way, is jobs and education.
Wow, never heard of such a thing.
I mean, can you imagine that? It's groundbreaking.
What about energy? Throw that in.
Ah, energy efficiency, right. Energy dependency. Oh, and we could probably talk about global warming.
Might as well.
That would be the best platform. Anyway, let's talk about what's going on. IBM reported this evening on their earnings, and they missed on revenues, and their EPS beat by about 13 cents. But, you know, we talked about this 100 times. IBM beating on EPS isn't the biggest thing in the world because, don't forget, they manage their EPS through their bailout. Through their buybacks.
Right.
So, not a big deal. Shares declined about 4% in the after hours to about 181.
It's way high.
I would think the next stop is going to be 172.
Okay.
Now, one of the things they're blaming, I thought this was really interesting. One of the things they're blaming the shortness in the reduction in revenue is due to China, sales in China.
Why is China? IBM has essentially turned itself into a service company.
And they're selling off their hardware business or a chunk of it to Lenovo.
Right. They've already sold a bunch of stuff to Lenovo.
Yeah. So why Lenovo's buying it if the weakness was in the hardware division, I have no idea.
No, they like making hardware, those guys.
Not making money, obviously.
Yeah, I don't care.
But it seems to be that it's possible, just possible, that maybe China is retaliating due to the NSA, due to the whole fact that the NSA has been spying and the concern that maybe some of the U.S.-made devices and hardware have some kind of intertwined spying mechanism.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what we accused Huawei of doing in congressional hearings, and now the Chinese, I think, were miffed by that, by the way.
Yeah.
And now, I guess, they're accusing us of the same thing, and they have more evidence.
I don't think they're accusing us. I think that we came out and told, I mean, with Snowden, we came out and basically, you know, he spilled the beans. And then with the whole thing with the spying on the phones and all that, and I don't think that they really were accusing us ever, but it was just found out.
Yeah, it could be.
Now I think
there's a lame excuse for IBM.
Yeah, you know, they're coming up with something at least. They got to blame something. Now, in terms of the whole NSA thing, I have a question. Last week, I think it was the end of last week, that there was an announcement that the Obama administration said that they're saying, hey, NSA can no longer collect private phone records and information, right?
They never really said that, but yes.
But the question I keep coming back to is, does President Obama have the authority to do that?
No.
Oh. It's not part of, like, his...
He doesn't manage the operation.
But how...
He never said anything. He was very vague about everything. He has a lot of generalities. I mean, if you listen to him, if you do read any of the deconstructions of that speech, he never really said anything. He didn't demand anything, didn't say anything. He just kind of was an apologist, the way I saw it.
Well, I just find it interesting.
Telling the public not to worry. Don't worry, everybody.
I just find it interesting that somehow the idea is, and it's okay, that the president can actually, you know, invoke law. Now, unless this falls under his job as the commander-in-chief and this is a military, you know, it's under the military side of things, I don't understand how he can, you know, enact these kind of, you know.
Well, I don't think he enacted anything.
Well, there's news that I saw that said it, but.
Well, that's, you know, I think these interpretations are all mistaken and they don't take into account Executive Order 12333, which is the whopper that pretty much gives these guys the authority to do anything.
Mm.
The rest of this, the way I see this, is just a bunch of lies.
Yeah, we'll see. But China's still having some problems there. This is very severe liquidity problems in their financial sector. And what's been happening is there's been a really, I mean, just vast moves in their money market rates and in the repurchase rates. And there has been these big moves in China. The PBOC keeps on coming in and injecting liquidity into the markets, and then it dies down a little bit. But it seems to me that the whole real estate bubble, the whole real estate situation that's going on there, that they're trying their best to curb, but it's not working very well, has been to blame for this. And I don't know where it goes. I mean, we just saw last week that the prices for homes in China rose more than 15% last month in Guangzhou and Shenzhen and a variety of other places. And there was 18% in Shanghai and 16% in Beijing. 69 of the 70 cities that were tracked by the government actually were, you know, higher. That's pretty amazing.
Well, I remember that one of the early pre-97 housing booms in Hong Kong, where studio apartments were selling for $1 million, and it was impossible for all the news publications to put people in Hong Kong in bureaus because they couldn't afford to live there. And the magazines couldn't afford to pay them enough to stay there because of these real estate bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a very common thing, it seems to me, in China to have these huge bubbles. And they sustain them better than we've ever done. I mean, they will go, I think you may be at the very beginning of the boom.
The difference is they're not as sensible here. We
crash as soon as, you know, it gets just a little crazy, but they don't.
Well, the big difference is that many of the banks are government-owned over there.
Right.
So they're not going to let them fail, and they're going to keep on pumping money into them. And, you know, the difference here is they're private enterprises, you know, wink, wink. And, you know, while we'll continue to put money into them, still, it's not exactly a public entity. So that could be the issue.
But, no, China's got – it will have a collapse. It's just – I don't think we will be able to predict it.
Yeah.
These are nice jumps, though, I have to say. It'd be nice to be in that market.
Yeah, no kidding. There's a new study out that says that 85 of the top richest people in the world have as much money as the bottom 50% of the world in total.
Okay.
So the media is making a big deal of this. Now, obviously, you know, they had to pick, they had to get down to the number, the 85, and then say, okay, the 50% lowest. They had to figure out these numbers and kind of keep going back and forth to make it somewhat newsworthy. What do you think about this?
Well, I think it's interesting the media would make a big fuss, but nobody ever backs the idea of what I think is really a fair taxation system, which is a wealth tax. I've been harping on this for years, by the way, which is the way they have it in Switzerland. And the problem with income tax to me has always been that it doesn't allow you, you're essentially taking the money from people trying to accumulate wealth instead of letting them accumulate wealth and to catch up with these other people, but you're handicapped. Many of the 85 wealthiest people don't have any income. They don't even pay an income tax because they don't have an income. They essentially just live off of annuities, or they live off of interest, or they live off of capital gains, which is going to be lower, or they just live, they have a corporation that, you know, funds, they live off an expense account. I don't know, but it just seems like it's an unfair situation if we don't implement a wealth tax.
You know, that would be.
And by the way, here's the other thing about the wealth tax. By the way, you would probably pay about the same amount in taxes with a wealth tax, by the way, so it's nothing to be too concerned about. If you were Warren Buffett, though, he would be paying a lot more than he's going to pay paying income tax. And Warren Buffett has come out publicly, as you've noticed, and demanded that rich people like Warren Buffett and Bill Gates pay more taxes, and this wealth tax would take care of that that complaint.
But how does that work? Does it tax you on your wealth, and then the next year it goes again and tax you again on your wealth?
Yeah, every year. It's a couple points. It's not that much.
So if you have a what's this round number, $1 billion, and you taxed 1%, let's just say, on, you know, an excise tax on the over, you know, on amounts over a certain amount. So the next year you come around and you're taxed again on that money.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I mean, the money should have generated enough to pay for the taxes.
You would hope. You would think.
Yeah.
And what happens if you go down in value?
Well, you don't pay as much.
Hmm. Seems like multiple taxation on the same money.
No, it's just this. It is. Well, what's the difference between that? I mean, as property tax.
That's true. No, that's a good point. That's exactly the same thing, actually.
Yeah, it's totally the same thing. Essentially, it's a universal form of property tax if you consider your wealth property.
Right. Right. Well, I don't think it's going to go, but.
Of course not.
Interesting idea. Interesting idea. You know, and if it does, then maybe people wouldn't be buying things like bottles of Macallan for $631,000.
Yeah, well. You know, the way I see it, that you say you had how much was that Macallan?
$630,000.
Okay.
For a bottle.
So you buy the Macallan and you drink it with your buddies. Now mm-hmm. it's worth nothing and you don't mm-hmm. pay any tax on it.
What do you do with a bottle of 631? What is that per glass or per you know, just per
Well, you're
shot?
Not going to get 630 glasses out of it. You're probably going to get what's a shots, which would be an ounce shot. What is it? It's a
liter, I guess, or a fifth.
Yeah, 750 milliliters, and you probably get about I don't know.
50?
I have to do the calculation. I can't do that
shots?
In my head because I have to do a conversion. But I'm thinking 16, 32, probably about. 30 shots, I'd say, guess. 30 shots. So each one would be worth $20,000. It's 30.
Wow.
Yeah. It'd be about 20 grand.
Just opening the bottle and taking a sniff of it is about 10 grand. You know? But that did, in fact, happen. The most expensive bottle of scotch was sold last week at Sotheby's in Hong Kong, setting a record for the most expensive bottle of scotch of a single malt. I would think it's going to be of a blend as well, sold at auction. That's pretty amazing.
They have a lot of money, a lot of new money back there, and so
I
they
would
buy.
Think so.
And scotch is one of the big sellers in Hong Kong. That and cognac.
A lot of money going on. Let's see. Now, Dropbox. You like Dropbox? You use Dropbox?
I have used it. I use it. I have a Dropbox account.
I use it a lot. I like it. It synchronizes everything. It's really neat. Now, they're going to be probably coming out with an IPO soon. And the latest round of financing from BlackRock now values Dropbox at $10 billion. Now, what's interesting is I'm sure that there are corporate users or personal users that pay some kind of a premium for maybe additional, you know, usage, or maybe there's companies that have that, whatever it may be. But for the most part, it's a freebie.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting a company to a valuation of $10 billion, I guess these days it doesn't matter, but it seems a little absurd.
Yeah, I'm reminded of around 1999 when we were seeing this sort of thing happening. We're really on the cusp of another dot-com collapse with this stuff.
There's some things that are just I mean, Twitter.
It's
Twitter.
Just, but, you know, but if you're prepared, if you're ready and you can make the move, I think there's some short opportunities that would be just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, but right now you look at, you know, a Tesla, which is overvalued like crazy. You know, it was at 140 last week and it's at 170 something now.
Yeah, wow.
You look at Twitter, which dropped down pretty well and just decided to just keep on going up after that. So, you know, I think we're still in a situation where there's money pouring in. Listen, look what happened with the markets today. The markets today opened up. The S&P futures were up about 9 points, 10 points or so right before the open, and right about there, and they kind of opened up and they pushed it up, and then it just dropped like a rock. I mean, like a rock. Probably about 10 to 12 points on the downside by about 11 a.m. And then, you know, by the end of the day, they pushed it up. It ended up 5 points. But, you know, this is kind of what's going on. There's a lot of money swashing around. And until the Fed really does something to pull back even more, I don't think, you know, you're going to see this continuation of this, you know, dropping and then somebody coming in and picking it up. Hmm. But, you know, these moves, we've seen this all throughout the month of January, that there really has been no trend. It's only been, you know, just a movement between a very small range. And right now the Nasdaq is up slightly, the Dow is down, and the S&P is down for the month of January.
Well, you know, as January goes, so goes the year.
So goes the year, so they say. The average movie ticket. You know, I was at the movies the other night. I saw Lone Survivor. That was good. Did you see that?
No. I didn't need to see it because the title apparently has the story in it. He's a lone survivor. Yeah.
Oh, maybe there's a surprise ending.
I don't think there is.
No?
Is there?
No.
Oh, okay.
So you knew the story. Okay, what about The Wolf on Wall Street? Did you see that one?
I want to see that one because that's supposed to actually be, you know, it's they dubbed it a comedy, even though it's a kind of a black comedy, and it's a, some people think of it as an art film. And I like Scorsese, and I like DiCaprio, especially when they're working together. They do great work.
Right.
And so I assume it's going to be a really fun movie in terms of it's apparently, everyone who's seen it tells me that it's essentially a depressing, it's not depressing, but it's a movie that is just highlighting nothing but douchebags.
Yeah, that's what I heard also. And I think the comedy part of it, which may not be comedy, is really reality, you know, and it comes off as comedy. But I haven't seen it yet, but I heard it's very good. It's a three-hour movie.
Yeah, that's the thing that's kind of taken me.
Right.
I mean, you think they could have tightened it up. I may just wait for it to show up on HBO. I probably won't go see it in the theaters.
Yeah. Let's see, what else? Cool gadgets. I don't know if we talked about this. This is really awesome. Oh, I was going to mention the movie tickets. The movie tickets on average have now, the price is now $8.13 in 2013, up from about $7.96.
Wait, your math, how much are they?
$8.13.
How is that up $7?
Up from $7. Up from an average of $8 in 2012.
That's reasonable. Around here, the tickets tend to float around $12.
Wow. But I thought more interesting was the average price of the Super Bowl tickets that are coming up. It's like $2,500.
$2,500 for the Super Bowl ticket?
Yeah.
Well, that's the same price you used to, at least 10 years ago, you used to pay for the U.S. Open.
Really?
Yeah, they're really expensive.
I went to the U.S. Open last year.
Did you go to the finals?
No. Yeah. I was in the early rounds.
Early rounds, I think.
And somebody bought me the ticket, so I have no idea what it cost.
Well, they're pretty expensive.
Mm.
But yeah, Super Bowl, it doesn't surprise me. They can get that.
Minimum parking fee is $300 if you want to park.
Why would they jack up the parking fee?
There's no parking there. You can go from anywhere from $300 to about $1,000 to park.
You know, that's just a scheme. It's just a ripoff.
I mean, who would take their car? Just take a taxi or take a limo?
Yeah.
Or walk.
Lord, I'm sure there's a subway exit around there somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure there is too. That's just a ridiculous price. And the numbers for, prime seats or even the boxes are ridiculous.
Oh, the boxes must be $1 million.
Oh, they're unbelievable. Unbelievable. Personally, I much prefer to watch it at home. Although, I've never been to the Super Bowl, so I don't know if
I went to one Super Bowl, so I've seen it. I know that's it. I don't have to go to another one. And I still think nowadays, I think I went to Super Bowl 20 or 30 or something like that, but whatever it was, it wasn't as bad as football is now with all the commercials, just incessant number of commercials throughout the game, which changes the pace of the game, and the different team with the old guys can do better because mm-hmm. they get to rest more during the commercial breaks. And it's very – when you're at the game, it's just like you see these people just standing around. It's very horrible. I refuse to – I've been offered numerous times I can go see the 49ers and I can go in one of these boxes. I won't go.
Yeah.
It's not worth the hassle. It's boring. Yeah.
I mean, I used to go to the Dolphins game down here until we had season tickets. And these particular seats, they were down low and they were maybe on about the 20-yard line. But the problem was that when somebody would walk down these particular seats, when somebody would walk down the aisle, which they were doing throughout the game, can't see anything. It was just the angle was just wrong.
Huh.
So, all right, on to some cool gadgets. Google is in the process of developing smart contact lenses. Now, this is much different than the SmartWig by Sony, because what this contact lens can do is collect data and report back to you on your sugar levels for people with diabetes.
Yeah, there has been some devices supposedly that can look in your eyeball and tell you what your sugars are. It'd be kind of interesting. I don't know how does it report back to you because it's in your eye.
Yeah, but it reports well. It must, it obviously must come on your device. You know, must somehow wirelessly, I guess. I don't know.
So in other words, you're putting a transmitter in your eyeball?
I guess so.
I don't
Maybe
know.
Maybe it has a Wi-Fi or good. A little antenna that sticks out or something. I mean, it's not like you got to then fish it out, and maybe you do. No, that doesn't make any sense. I was going to say maybe you take it out, you put it into something, and then that doesn't make any sense because what would be the point of having it?
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah, right. It's pointless. If it's supposed to be real time, then it has to be real time. But if it's in your eyeball, how does that work?
Yeah, no, it has to be that it obviously – we'll look this up. But it has to be that it's somehow communicating. That's the whole point of smart, right?
Yeah, but you want a radio transmitter in your eyeball.
Maybe it's not that. Maybe you get a heads-up display.
I saw the circuit around the contact lens when they announced this thing, and it looks as though that your pupil is looking through the hole between the circuits that are around on the iris, and I don't see how it can give you a heads-up display.
Hmm. Maybe it works with the Google Glasses, the Google Glasses.
And again, you're still dealing with this issue of transmission.
Hmm.
I don't know. It seems. I mean, Google's. I think it's like Google and Amazon are both trying to compete with each other with crazy ideas. I mean, Amazon's now got this. Besides having that stupid delivery chopper, which is never going to fly,
the drones,
as it were. Now they got this predictive. They're going to send you stuff because they know you're going to order it.
Yeah, how does that work? Is that
it's not
going to
work because
of,
if you got something that you think you were going to order because they have it predicted. What are you going to do with it? You're going to just save it. You're going to keep it there and say, hey, I didn't order this. I'm keeping it.
It reminds me of the Columbia Record Club. That you remember that? You get a couple of freebies, and then the next thing you know you're holding it.
I took a number of seminars back a long time ago, and I learned direct marketing, which I maintain much of this information, even though things have changed with email marketing. But I remember this one time. It was this very famous guy that was giving these. It was, I think, 3 or 4 days of separate full days of marketing and copywriting and all this stuff. It's great. It was in New York. We discussed the couple of things that are interesting about these kinds of clubs. One is that the club, it's the thing where you have to tell them to stop or they'll just send you another book or they'll send you another record. It's already built into the system that if you just don't pay them, just stop paying them, they really don't do much about it.
Oh, they hawk you though. Oh, they'll call.
Well, it's just tell them to screw themselves. It's already figured in. And then the other one, which I thought was really fascinating, is that if you're one of these clubs that sells let's say miniature cars, you get like these little bitty cars or something that's some sort of club because they're special or coins.
Yeah.
The smart money immediately sends you a big wall hanging where you put the cars into this like a little bookshelf for cars, a little.
Uh-huh.
Because
so it looks empty.
Apparently the mentality of the public is that if you have – it's like, or give you a book with the coins that hold all these coins, but you only have two of them. There's this tendency for most people to want to fill the thing up.
Yeah, that's like the quarters. Remember when all the quarters came out with the different backs for the different states?
Yeah, and once you got that book, you had to fill all those holes.
Right.
I always thought that was fascinating for some reason.
Yep. Now, I was wondering, I was starting to think about if Google can come out with this contact lens that can monitor your sugar levels. I was thinking about what other kinds of things could be utilized in a smart device to monitor, your different things like, your heart rate, obviously, and things like that. I was thinking about an automatic PSA level.
A what?
PSA.
What's a PSA?
Isn't that for the prostate and your prostate whatever it is levels?
Does that change like so much so that you have to be monitored?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Well, I'm just saying. I mean, you get it. Where would they put that device? It's the prostate specific antigen.
Yeah.
It's blood level of PSA is often elevated in men with prostate cancer.
Yeah, they could put that device where the sun doesn't shine.
Anyway, now with these devices, there's some trouble that's brewing, it seems, because there's a gent in Ohio. And he found himself under investigation by Homeland Security. He was wearing the Google glasses, you know, the goggle thingamajiggies, and he went to the movies. And it seemed that during the movies, where he was watching Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit, the, this gent was approached by some folk with the badges, and they were accusing him possibly of movie theft. Because I guess these Google goggles can record things.
Yeah.
So he was sitting there with these things on, and they were then accusing him of stealing movies, and the Homeland Security got involved.
What has Homeland Security got to do with movie theft?
I don't know. I guess it's their jurisdiction?
No.
No. It was because it was a spy movie? I don't know.
That's weird.
Yeah, really weird, right?
You gotta send me a link to that story.
You could probably just look it up. Just look up Google Goggles movie goer.
And what's Homeland Security doing at the movies in the first place?
Well, they were probably on break. Not much going on.
Hmm.
And then Amazon, you're right. Amazon and Google are really, I mean, it's like an announcement every few days. Amazon now has been looking at putting on pay TV services. And they're considering launching this. Now, I started thinking about this. They're going out and they're trying to find different entertainment companies about licensing their TV channels and all that. Why the heck don't they just buy Hulu and be done with it?
That's a good question. That's what seems to be a logical thing to do. I'm surprised Google doesn't buy Hulu.
Yeah, I mean, it seems crazy that they're doing this. I mean, obviously, the only real players in this market are what? Hulu and Netflix, right?
Pretty much.
I don't understand why they're going to try to build their own. Now, if they do build their own, obviously it's good for the entertainment companies, right? Because they get even more, unless they have some exclusives already with Netflix and Hulu. But they'll get more revenue for the same amount of, output. But that just seems stupid. It seems like, you know, like I said, that just, you know, instead of building the whole thing and all that, just roll the other one into yours and be done with it. I mean, just like Amazon when they bought, Zappos, remember that?
Yeah.
And when they bought, did they buy Living Social? They bought one of those companies.
They bought Audible.
Right, exactly. So, you know, just go out and buy the thing. It's already in place and just start collecting the revenue and be done with it.
Right, already has customers.
Yeah, it has customers. It's got the licensing. It's got everything there. And, you know, trying to build
all the hard work's been done.
Right. Exactly. So, hey, the Olympics are coming. You watch the Olympics?
You know, I end up watching some of them. I like to watch the downhill, and I like to watch the stuff that's semi-violent.
Oh. I mean, I think that, well, I get off on the curling.
On the what?
Curling.
I like curling.
Curling's the best.
I've always thought to myself, you know, I think I could do this.
Really? You'd be able to slide like that on the ice?
No, I wouldn't be sliding. I'd be pushing the stone.
You'd be the pusher.
I wouldn't be the sweeper.
You wouldn't be a sweeper.
No, I wouldn't be a stone chucker.
Yeah, I think, what is that guy called? He's the hurler?
The thrower, the bowler.
He's a bowler?
I don't know, whatever he is.
And then you got to scream. You got to scream a lot of things like, you know, hup, and, more, faster. You got to kind of have a few codes that you're screaming as these guys are shuffling down the ice with their little brooms and, you know, trying to speed it up. That's a pretty, I mean, it's, what is it?
They don't show it enough.
Last time they did.
Oh, I don't remember that, but I remember that a couple of them ago when they had those cute, that girl team from North Dakota or wherever they were from. That was actually kind of entertaining.
You'd be the skip.
It's the skip?
The skip is responsible for leading the team and giving it strategic direction.
The skip calls the shots.
Yeah, the skip calls the shots for his or her teammates to play through verbal direction or physical gestures. In many cases, the skip communicates his planned trajectory of the shot by tapping his or her broom on the ice and with a motion to other stones in the playing area. Usually determines the required weight, turn, and line of the stone. And hold. Now you hold the broom for the throwing player to aim at. Well, that would probably, no, that's the guy that taps at the other end of the ice, you know? Yep. Choices. Oh, this is pretty complex.
I think so.
You have to take into consideration the ice conditions. You must understand the playing style.
You throw a few practice rounds, so you get a pretty good feeling for the ice conditions.
Yeah.
It's like, putting.
Yeah. Well, when you go to the bowling alley, you get to, you know,
here's all the terms. Slow, are they fast? Are they greasy? Whatever.
Now, what's a tournament in which curlers compete?
The curling tournament.
It's called Bundspiel.
That makes sense.
When you burn a rock, it's a rules infraction that happens when a player touches a stone as it's traveling down the sheet. There's the gripper.
Well, I can see that you're going to be really geared up for this next Winter Olympics.
Yeah. Hurry hard. Hurry hard. Oh, yeah, that's one of the things you say. Hurry hard. Hurry. Hurry hard. Hurry. The members. Okay, here we go. The lead. That's you. The lead throws the first two rocks of the end, and oh, then you sweep the next six. No, that's not good.
Oh.
The skip. Yeah, you got to be the skip. You just tell people what to do. And you deliver the last two shots. So you're the cleanup guy.
Oh, so the skip tells everyone what to do, and then the skip takes the last two shots?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. There's a lead, there's a second, and a third.
Huh.
The third, a mate or vice, who throws the fifth and sixth stones, must be good at all shots, especially draws. It's the third shot, the seventh shots will be thrown by the skip. And to help the skip discuss the strategy of final two strokes.
I had no idea.
Oh, there's more. There's so much more. Yep.
Now you can explain cricket to me.
That's way outside my boundaries. It just looks like a bunch of guys in white clothes yakking a ball.
No, but then they had the scoring. It's like three overs, five runs, six others, and they got all these crazy names, and you can't – how do you tell who won? I mean, and it goes for days.
Yep. Now, here's some great reasons to try the sport of curling. You can play at any age.
Yeah,
both
I suppose
sexes
you could.
Can play.
You could be an old person, young kid.
Yep. Both sexes can play, and curling with your significant other can be a lot of fun.
Bocce ball is probably easier.
I love bocce ball. The rules are easy. You don't play a lot. You don't have to pay a lot to play. It's good for your health. And it's wheelchair accessible.
Well, the Olympics can't come soon enough.
Oh, gosh. Okay, yeah, and speaking about the Olympics, I don't know if you've been following what Vladimir Putin has been saying. But he's saying it's okay. It's okay if is his words, gay people, they'll be safe at the Olympics as long as they leave the kids alone.
Yeah, this is just an interpretation. We discussed this to extreme on the No Agenda show. This whole thing is just an anti-Russian publicity stunt. It's got nothing to do with gays. It just has to do with our government and this and our battle with the Russians in Syria, and we're trying to screw them out of making extra money on their Olympics, even though NBC's not too happy with any of this. But this is just nonsense.
Yeah, and Russia has ponied up, I think, the most money ever spent on a Winter Olympics or so. It's just
yeah, they really got carried away.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure that Putin's going to come in riding a horse into the Olympic, opening ceremony or something like that. Yeah, bear, of course.
And then jump into a cold bath.
Yes, exactly. He actually wanted to do outdoor synchronized swimming in the cold by himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris Christie.
Yeah, another one of your favorites.
Let's just pass on that. The whole thing's out of hand. Ridiculous. Let's see what else is going on. Target. So Target is, obviously coming under a lot of scrutiny due to the theft issue. They seem to – this is the latest story. The latest story is that it has been all of the theft has been tracked back to one individual, a 17-year-old Russian hacker. Do you buy that?
It's hard to believe anything about this sort of thing. I mean, it's possible, but – I'm not convinced of any of it. It's just too sketchy. The 17-year-old Russian hacker. Okay, well, let's assume it is some guy like that. So what are we going to do about it? Generally speaking, by the way, most of this activity takes place out of the Ukraine. Not so much Russia, but it's possible, I guess.
Well, I mean, I find it interesting that, I mean, this one hacker developed whatever this particular Trojan horse, a code, or whatever it is that was able to basically get all the information on the swipe in real time. And, okay, so fine. And we're talking about supposedly 100 million people have been affected. Target is having a problem. They're saying that they possibly could be halting its buybacks to pay for the cost tied to the security breach. You know, nobody knows exactly what the cost is. Now we're finding out that Neiman Marcus and a few other retailers, and there's five or six other retailers which will remain nameless, it seems, that also have been, you know, hacked.
So yeah, well, Neiman Marcus was named.
Neiman Marcus was named. And you know, I don't know what this is, if there's any benefit for, let's say, Visa or MasterCard, or if it's a problem for them. I don't know if it's a benefit for the securities business or the security business where, you know, they're going to try to stop this hacking. But, you know, or people are going to go to cash or other, you know, forms of payment. But it seems like this is a real problem.
Yeah.
But, right. Let's see. I got some other good things. So, this whole story. Listen, some farmers are raising pigs more humanely in wide open spaces instead of very tight quarters and selling to restaurants and grocers increasingly. Because these places that are buying them are interested in how animals are treated. So I was wondering, let me get this straight. You let the pig roam in a wide open place. Maybe you give him baths more frequently and
you talk nice to him.
Yeah, you talk nice. You put some music on outside, you know, you keep everything hit. And then you say, come on over here, and you slit the freaking neck.
Yeah, pretty much.
So we're good if they're treated well during their lifetime, because, you know, pigs are people too. And then we just go kill them and eat them. And it's so important for people that are eating this that these particular swine and these other animals are treated well until the point that their heads are lopped off and their meat is carved from their bones.
Yeah.
So they feel better.
This is, by the way you're just mocking this because you're like some, you know, essentially a city slicker living in Florida.
What does that have
never
to do
really
with
buy meat off the hoof, obviously.
I've eaten
which is what we
hoof.
Do. And we're very concerned, my wife and myself, about the way that animals treated and what he's fed.
Oh, come on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
You don't care how they're treated. Maybe how they're fed, because you'll eventually ingest whatever the buildup of whatever they have in their body is, but you don't care how they're treated, do you really?
Yeah, no. You don't want the poor animal to live a life of being a nervous wreck.
Well, why?
It's all these hormones in the thing. It's bad news. I don't know why you put this on the list. I'm very disturbed by this.
I don't know if you're kidding or not. Let me ask you something. What about the veal?
What about veal? It's delicious.
Veal, good. But the best veal is the whitest meat and all that, and that comes from when they're basically in an area that they can't move throughout their lifetime.
No. That's
good.
Not true.
No.
There are veal that is – there's a lot of veal done that way, which is bad. But generally speaking, it's just a calf that's just drinking milk and not eating grass yet. And before they get around to the grass, because they're not ready, you eat them.
I have one other question for you when we're talking about this whole how animals are treated and all that. Vegetarians, the ones that eat no meat, red meats, but they eat fish.
Yeah.
What is it about fish that people don't care about? Seriously. I don't get that.
Well, there's a lot of people that believe that if it has a face.
Right. Eyes and all that.
Looking
right.
at you as opposed to a fish. It's not good.
Why don't fish
I'm
look
sure
at
the
you?
Fish are not happy campers when they're pulled out of the water and then and then they essentially drown in the air.
Yeah, they suffocate. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get that. It's
horrible.
It's much the people better. People don't eat. Yeah, they don't eat anything.
The Chinese
has eyes
are better.
Or ears.
Instead of letting the fish die that way, they club them, usually in the back of the store.
It's much better that way.
You got to go to a Chinese. You don't see it so much in San Francisco. You used to see it all the time. But, you know, everyone got upset. Oh, this is horrible. But what they do, the Chinese in the Chinese stores, they keep the fish alive in a tank. And so if you want to, you know, whatever you're going to eat that night, a bass or whatever, they pull it. You pick it out. You point at it in the tank. They pull it out of the tank. And before it can drown in the air and suffocate, they club it.
No, they club it or they chop its head off, either one.
Yeah, and it's bouncing around usually when they're clubbing it. It's quite an entertaining situation.
Listen, I fish, and there have been times we catch a tuna, and yeah, sushi right there.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just saying.
Oh, well, there you
go. But
have.
You know,
have
it's
you
like anything
that?
Else. If we don't know about it, it's okay. You know, we have hamburger. God knows what a hamburger is, where it came from, and all. We don't think about it. It's a hamburger. It's a burger. It's something on a bun. We don't think about it. As long as we don't think about it too much, and that's my lesson and my advice this evening. is don't think about how the animal, just eat it. You know what I mean? We don't know if vegetables have feelings, but that's okay to eat.
Maybe carrots really don't dislike it. They have a horrible time when they're pulled out of the earth.
Yeah, I would think that's a horrible thing. It's, you know, pulling them out from their cozy, comfy little surroundings that they love and that they flourish in. And anyway, what else can we, what can we top this with? I have no idea, but state of emergency in Bangkok, maybe?
Oh, God, that and the Ukraine are just completely out of control.
Out of control. Bangkok.
And I think Bangladesh is having issues.
You know, what's going on with – listen, when I was in Bangkok, you know, they have a king. And the king has – first of all, I mentioned something about the king when I was driving in a car. I said, you know, there's a king. He's just pictures everywhere. And he has a camera around his neck. He's a big photographer.
Wow.
In all these giant
pictures.
Lots
of things to take pictures of.
Yeah. So – I said something about the – don't talk about the king. I said, what? I'm not going to say anything bad. Don't talk about the king. I'm like, okay, who's listening? You know, it's like – but they're very much – they're usually very much under control and everything is in good shape. And I don't know what's going on over there where they're freaking out so badly.
Yeah.
They're just not happy.
Don't know.
Yeah. And then – you know,
I tried
to
follow it, but it's just a protesting corruption is essentially what's going on.
Oh, well, that's part of the process over there. You have to really, you know.
Well, I guess you can only go so far with it before people get upset.
Yeah. And then just to end on this news points, Standard Poor's is now using an account of a conversation between Kim Geithner and former Secretary Treasury Secretary and Harold McGraw, the chairman of S&P's parent company, to bolster its argument that the government lawsuit amounted to retaliation. I guess there was some kind of conversation that took place, and you know how they pull these things out of somewhere so late in the game. By the way,
I don't know.
It's always amazing to me. Like, what do? They kept it in the side pocket just in case they needed it.
I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, but you know, this is going on. By the way, and when we talk about the whole idea of the ratings of securitized instruments or these mortgage pools that were put together and sold as one batch, and really the underlying securities were not individually worthwhile, but yet when you put the whole thing together, they put these, you know, really good ratings on it. You know, we're starting to see again the advent resurgence of securitization, of second mortgages, of all sorts of funny ways to, you know, provide income for people without the same level of scrutiny. So who knows where this is going to go to again. But, you know, I think that many people forget that what happened in 2008 wasn't unique. Maybe it was deeper, but it wasn't unique. You know, we've had, as you know, the cycles that, I don't know, every 10 years, the banks do the same thing. They pull the same crap every time, you know, or there's some hedge fund that blows up like a long-term capital, or it could be or we have a technology bubble, or we have a real estate bubble. It just kind of, the whole thing repeats itself. And then, you know, after it happens, everybody forgets about it. First, they're horrified. Nobody's going to ever invest in stocks or anything like that again. We're not going to use margin and leverage, and we're not going to use derivatives. And then slowly but surely things get better, and then it starts all over again, and then it busts again. And we go through the same process that we're not going to do this again, whatever. And then we just ramp it back up. So kind of a bit where we are these days, where everybody's bullish in this environment. And you got to wonder, you know, is there going to be another shoe to drop?
You know, yeah.
In Europe, there's still a lot of problems there, right? Well, you would agree with that. Hmm. But, you know, when you look around the world this year, you see that the Nikkei is down 3%. China's down about 5%. U.S. is flat. Brazil's
down.
We're
waiting for the shorts. They just haven't shown up in the market.
Yeah. The Brazil's down 5%. And you know what? The best market of developed countries is this year.
What?
It's neck and neck with Spain and Italy.
Oh, yeah. Well, it got so depressed, I would think so.
Well, but they did very well last year in 2013. And now they're following up with about a 5% and 6% gain so far.
We should start looking at some of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the last year, the real estate of Europe, if you invest in regional, went through the roof. It's backed off a bit this year, but really, just an amazing run. You know, where you'd say, "Hey, I don't really want to be investing there because you know all the default risk and all the problems there, particularly in Portugal, Spain, a bit in Italy, but yet that was one of the better places, you know, to invest. And we
buy
talked
low,
about this
sell
before.
High.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Buy low, sell high.
So
and,
let's take
and
a look at
higher.
Our stocks of what we're talking about buying.
Yeah, let's
low.
Take a look at the stocks. You know, you made a variety of picks last week just to fill up the, you know, the whole amount of things that we have. And boy, so far they're doing pretty well for just, you know, the general picks.
Yeah, I got another one.
Okay. Oh, yeah, give it to
I
me.
I actually could do two, but I don't think I will. I might.
All right.
I might.
Okay. All right.
Do you have anything, or are you just going to post
I've this? Got a couple of things that – it's just – I got to be honest with you. There's a couple of things that are on my list, and they're just not – they're not perfect. I'll have some more next week, some really good ones, I think.
Well, you know, one of the things we're going to do on this show finally is we're going to stop doing the stock picks.
Oh?
Openly.
Ah.
It's going to be a subscription.
I think that's reasonable.
Well, yeah. Well, you're one of the best stock pictures. You've won competitions. So the stock picks last year were phenomenal, generally speaking. I think we did very well for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people can learn a lot by our discussion. We'll probably make the segment longer so we can talk a little bit about the charts maybe and why the maybe a little more about the rationale behind some of these picks. Mm-hmm. Besides, even though my rationale tends to be I'm seeing activity by somebody who seems to know what they're talking about, and then I'm getting on their coattails, which is not easy to do necessarily because it's impossible to follow some of these guys. But there's one guy I have my eye on.
Yeah.
Who's a bank guy, and he's in your neck of the woods. His name's Robert Goldstein, and he's a director at a bunch of banks. He's one of the directors at FNB Corporation. He's a director at Hampton Bank's Bank Shares, and he's apparently a director at Seacoast Banking. And he's got a couple of interesting he's buying up stock.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to put at least one of his banks, the one that's really tempting is Hampton Roads Bank Shares, which is HMPR, which is a very interesting. He bought in $14 million worth of this stock in December of last year for 40 cents a share, and the sucker's sitting at $1.82 right now.
Mm.
So he knew something. This is typical.
Yeah.
Well, right now he's bought about $5 million worth of Seacoast Banking of Florida.
Hmm.
And Seacoast, which is SBCF, has an entertaining chart. And it's sitting at about $12.45. And I think that's the one I'm going to put on this list.
SBCF.
SBCF.
Okay. It's currently at $12.
Yeah.
$12.50. Seacoast Banking Corp of Florida. Interesting. And this guy's been buying it up. All these different banks or just a few of them?
He's got one, two, just the three.
But he's been buying these?
Yeah, he's buying.
Hmm. That's interesting. Hmm. I mean, we're going to be seeing a lot of earnings coming out very shortly. You know, so far the earnings season, I would say, has been very mixed. You know, we're not really seeing a lot of excitement yet. When you see a particular stock, for example, today, the pharmaceuticals, by the way, are still doing very well. The biotechs, I should say. There was a company called Ironwood today that came out with their earnings, and they did much better on their EPS. Their revenue was a bit short. Stock was down about 2.5% before the market opened, and it finished today up about 12% because there was a little bit of hope that things are getting a little bit better there. They have some drugs in the pipeline and, you know, some cool stuff. And we saw that Biogen and, go down the list of companies are just screaming. I mean, just amazing moves on these biotechs. You remember last year I mentioned a company called there was a couple different companies I mentioned because of the bird flu issue. Remember that?
Yeah.
One of them was BioCrisp Pharmaceuticals, BCRX. I think we talked about that at about probably close to about $3 a share. It's like 11 and a half now.
Nice. You want to put it on your list?
Well,
maybe it's going to go to 20.
Yeah, it could. It could. You know, but I mean, I like Ironwood. I think that's going to be a good play. I mean, it's probably going to see a little bit of a a pullback that we usually see, but it's right above a very – I'll put Ironwood on there. I'll put – I like that stock. IRWD.
IRWD. Never heard of it. Huh.
It was up 16% today, actually.
Wow.
Yep. I'm going to put that on the list. Ironwood Pharmaceuticals. It eclipsed a very important resistance level today, and that was about 1440 or so. And there's a pretty much nice range up to about close to about 16 from here if it can, you know, continue to have some legs and do well. So I'll put that on my list.
All right.
It's a good technical breakout.
It looks nice. I'm looking at the chart.
Yeah, that was a good one. We're going to write down technical breakout. Technical breakout.
Yeah, it looks like it. That once it went past 14, it is up on the upswing.
Yep.
Now, what happens on this chart if it goes back below? Let's say it spikes up there, maybe even goes a little higher, mm-hmm. and then it comes back below 14. Is that a bad thing?
Yeah, I mean, the resistance level was, again, it's got a couple of wide ones on the daily chart. It's and on the weekly chart as well, looking at a longer term. The below 14 would be a problem, I would say. And you want to look really – let me kind of pull up this chart here. You see that bump there at about 12.5 or so. It kind of was playing
right,
with that.
It bumped up to 13.
Right, exactly. And then today there were some other reasons why, from a volume and a standpoint, that it when it broke out, it was really good. But if it goes, I mean, it really has the opportunity to probably at about 11.50 or so, and then I would say $12, and then to 11.50. If it breaks 12, it just comes right back. You got a problem there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you'll be out anyway by then.
Yep. Exactly. So. Done very well. I wonder what else today. Actually, let me take a look here at some of the real big movers of the Sears to close money-losing Chicago stores. Interesting. Hauppauge is up 6% today. Very nice. By the way, the 3D printing companies have been, you know, having all sorts of problems. They really been backing off after their earnings. Triple D was down about 5% today, as a matter of fact. Let's see here. Yeah, some of the Chinese companies really got hurt. Skechers is got hurt today. Intercept Pharmaceuticals, that thing's been all over the place. That's the one that went up like crazy as it did. Let's see what else we have. Gilead was up 4% today. The iron ore and the coal companies got beat up pretty good today. Rio Tinto came out with earnings after the close. But also you saw that the companies like Walter Energy, Cliffs Natural really got kind of poked today pretty badly. Yeah, yeah. And Nikkei's down tonight a little bit. Shanghai's up a little bit. What else is going on? Asia's pretty much down across the board as we're talking here, as a matter of fact. I'm trying to see if there's anything else that really was interesting that moved today. GE was down 1%. I mean, GE came out with the earnings last Friday, and they beat a bit. But, again, it wasn't a great deal. I mean, right now that we saw such a great run-up in the fourth quarter, and I think there's a lot of expectation that these companies really have to be – forget about beating by 1 cent. That's just not going to do it. You know, you got to beat pretty significantly in order to really, you know, have something that is going to be impressive.
Okay.
So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
All right. Well, I think we can probably wrap it up.
Yeah, I think we can. And we'll talk more about the whole idea of, you know, how we're going to work on this, subscription-based model for the podcast, you know, very shortly. But we're still working on some of the details, and we'll get that out to you. But it'll be, reasonably priced, and it'll be something that would really be beneficial. So you'll be able to listen to the core of the podcast, and then if you want to, you know, follow on and listen to the rest, we'll have a separate segment that, you know, for subscribers that can grab it and just listen to it.
Right.
Very good.
That would be cheap. All right. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
All right. Look forward to it.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.